Coming up in this episode...
He was chained very brutally on the floor of the Senate.
And if you can confiscate property, Sumner said, then you can confiscate the human property of the South and then liberate it.
This was the seminal moment that really focused Northern attention on the horrors of what's happening in the South.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections, hosted by two of your favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB. I'm Orlando Montoy.
And I'm Peter Biello. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own thoughts and ideas on just what gives these works the narrative edge.
All right, Peter, so we have a Civil War book today, so I'm expecting names like Beau and Wyatt and Charlotte or something like that.
Well, not quite. I mean, Civil War is the hook, but this is a biography about someone who was really prominent leading up to the Civil War, during the Civil War, and after the Civil War.
From Georgia?
No, not from Georgia, actually, from my home state, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
And so the connection here with Georgia is the author, right?
Yeah, the connection is the author. The author is living in Atlanta. So yeah, that's how it counts for this podcast.
And so tell us, who is the person we're talking about?
Well, let me make you guess. Okay, so the main thing people know about this guy from Massachusetts is that he was caned very brutally on the floor of the Senate in the mid-1850s.
Sumner. I don't know his first name.
Charles Sumner. Yes. Okay. Senator Charles Sumner from Massachusetts. The biography is called Charles Sumner, Conscience of a Nation, and it's by Zakir Temiz, who lives in Atlanta. He's a lawyer, and when he was in Yale Law School, he was writing a paper about Brown versus Board of Education. And that's how he got started on Charles Sumner, oddly enough.
Well, how do we get from 1950s back to the 1850s?
Right. Of course, Brown v. Board of Education, 1955. But in the argument, when he was researching this paper, Temiz found comments from Thurgood Marshall actually citing Charles Sumner more than 40 times by name. And he was amazed because, like many of us, he knew Sumner was a politician in the Civil Rights era, the Civil War era, but didn't know that Sumner was a lawyer who played a role in trying to bring racial integration of schools into Boston, where obviously he was not successful, but he did coin the term equality before the law.
So was he one of the early abolitionists? I mean, the abolition started in the late 1700s.
I mean, there's always been some form of it, right? So long as there's been slavery. But yeah, he was one of the early abolitionists.
So how did he become an abolitionist? Obviously, he grew up in the North, but how did he be that way?
Well, yeah, he grew up in Boston. He actually grew up on the north slope of Beacon Hill, which was essentially a free black neighborhood. And so he grew up surrounded by free black culture. And Zakir Temiz and I spoke in August at an event at the Atlanta History Center about this, and he told me more about Sumner's education.
And so he goes to Harvard, he gets his aristocratic education, he becomes an attorney, and starts to represent many members of the Boston mercantile class, many of whom made their money off of the cotton trade. And yet, as he does that, he still lives in his parents' home in this African-American neighborhood in Boston. And that contradiction of growing up in a black neighborhood while literally serving the mercantile class of Boston ate up at him for many years. And there was a guilt that festered in him for many years until he ultimately devoted himself to the abolitionist cause.
So how did he go about sort of making his case?
Well, as a lawyer, he was thinking about how to interpret the Constitution. And he always said that the Constitution needed to be interpreted generously in favor of quote-unquote human rights, which was not a widely used term back in those days, but he was using it. He found evidence among the founding fathers that the founders didn't want to permit slavery at the national level. They would allow it at the state level, though, and there was the expression freedom national, slavery sectional. Not sure if you're familiar with that.
No, and it doesn't sound very abolitionist. I mean, if you allow it in one place, it's an evil in one place. It's not
right, right. I mean, it's one of those constitutional arguments, and then he was of course advocating for complete abolition. He just thought it was abhorrent, and he was always pointing out ways in which the founding fathers, when they were writing the Constitution, for example, weren't super fond of referring to people as property. So they would write their way around that in the Constitution, or they would use euphemisms. Anyway, so there was that expression, freedom, national, slavery, sectional, and the name of the speech that Sumner gave in opposition to the Fugitive Slave Act of 1852. And that phrase sums up a lot of what became the Republican approach. And Sumner was constantly debating with pro-slavery legislators.
One time he was debating with a colleague, a Southerner, who pointed out that George Washington was a slaveholder. So surely slavery cannot be wrong if George Washington was a slaveholder. Then Sumner responded and said, but Washington freed his slaves in his will. So then he said, and this is a quote, from Washington on earth, I go to Washington in heaven. Washington on earth was a slaveholder, but Washington went to God as an abolitionist. For Thomas Jefferson, he said, Jefferson was temporally a slaveholder, but Jefferson wrote the words, all men are created equal. So Jefferson earned immortality as an abolitionist. And throughout his writings, public and private, he had this deep reverence for the founding fathers and this belief that liberty and equality were at the center of their project.
Well, Southern lawmakers clearly weren't swayed by his legal arguments.
No, not at all. Imagine if they had been, right? History would have been very different. But, you know, Sumner, in addition to making these legal arguments, was pretty vicious in his speeches. He did not hold back. And we can get into why he is that way later in this conversation, but suffice to say that he's not shy about name-calling, deeply personal insults. If you think hurling insults is a feature of today's politics alone, you really haven't taken a look at the
Senate. Well, we haven't seen any canings on the Senate floor lately.
Lately, no, but I mean, the vitriol you see on social media could stand in as a proxy for that, I think.
Yeah.
But so we're going to get into the story about the caning.
We
right?
want to get to the caning.
Right. That's the big event. But before that, leading up to that, before things got physical, there was a speech that was particularly insulting to Southerners, the Crime Against Kansas speech, which opposed the spread of slavery to Western territories. And to speak out against slavery, as Sumner does in Washington, D.C., which is a slave owning city, that was a dangerous thing to do.
You could not walk from Capitol Hill to the White House without passing by three slave auction houses on the way. If you were anti-slavery in Washington, D.C., you could be harassed or accosted on the street. If you were Charles Sumner, you were already getting death threats by this time. But Sumner decides that he must speak out. And he didn't know moderation. He writes to a friend and says, I'm not kidding, he writes to a friend and he says that he plans to utter the most thorough philippic ever uttered in a legislative body. A philippic is a really insulting speech. And again, this is a man who knew his history and who had studied classical Rome and Greece. So he knows all about the history of insulting speeches.
So in the speech, and this is the mid-1850s before the Civil War began, he compares President Franklin Pierce to a rapist. He compares Senator Stephen Douglas to a noisome squat of an animal. And he singles out the chair of the Judiciary Committee, Andrew Pickens Butler from South Carolina, a senator. He insults the state of South Carolina, basically saying it could be wiped out of existence and civilization wouldn't really be lesser for it. He mocks Butler's speech impediment because Butler had just had a stroke.
Well, that's kind of low.
It's the worst philippic, right? It's the worst philippic ever uttered in the Senate. And he compares Butler to being a rapist by saying Butler had a mistress, polluted in the sight of the world, but chaste in his own eyes, the harlot slavery. So needless to say, Butler was incensed by this, and so was his nephew, Congressman Preston Brooks. So Brooks finds Sumner in the Senate and beats him with his cane so badly that he's left bloody, suffers for years with lingering pain, has PTSD. But it's significant not just because it's a horrific act of violence, but because the news of this divides the country. I mean, this is a seminal moment. Southerners celebrate Brooks. In fact, he briefly resigns from the Senate, but then he's immediate, or rather from Congress, but he's immediately reelected. But Northerners are just horrified by this.
And then overnight, Sumner becomes this white senator who had been brutalized by a slaveholder in much the same way that slaves were brutalized every day. African Americans across the country write to Sumner and kind of claim him as one of their own, because he himself now bore the scars of slavery. Sumner, whenever he was interviewed in the aftermath, would compare his injuries and say that what he has suffered is nothing compared to what the, quote, poor little slave goes through every day. So Sumner is connected to the wounds of enslaved people, and that sparks a wave of sympathy and empathy across the white North.
So in retrospect, you could look at it one way and say it's just one blip in the radar as far as unhinged moments before the Civil War goes, but you could also argue that this was the seminal moment that really focused Northern attention on the horrors of what's happening in the South. It kind of galvanized Southerners against insulting Northerners, like this guy from Massachusetts saying something about someone from South Carolina. And it also follows context that Zachary Temes spells out in this biography, where Sumner's constantly poking the bear. Like, he's constantly saying, this is wrong. We need to back off of this as a country. The South is perpetrating all manner of horrors upon black people in the South. And he's just constantly doing it without regard to political
wins.
He was
constantly poking the bear on both sides, as you know, for good on two decades before the first shots were fired.
Yeah, and but I would say, based on my reading of this biography and other things about the Civil War, that there are more people who were willing to moderate and compromise, right? Even Lincoln famously has been said to want to compromise if it meant keeping the Union together. But Sumner was not in that camp. He would be considered a radical of his time.
And what did he do during the Civil War then? Did he pick up arms? Obviously not.
No, I mean, he could barely function in the Senate, frankly, because of his injuries from this caning, which lasted for so long. And some of the treatments he pursued, which we won't get into too many of the details there, some of the treatments he pursued left more damage than they cured. You really feel bad for the guy trying to heal from this moment, even if he did milk it for every political advantage he could. But during the Civil War, he didn't really pass any meaningful legislation per se. But as a senior senator at the time, he had Lincoln's ear. And when the Civil War broke out, he urged Lincoln, said, hey, you should use your war powers to issue an Emancipation Proclamation. And Zachary Temes spoke about this at the Atlanta History Center.
There are many things a president can do in war that you cannot do in peace. You can order military battalions to attack a neighborhood or to attack other people. You can order people to be killed. You can confiscate property. And if you can confiscate property, Sumner said, then you can confiscate the human property of the South and then liberate it. So Sumner presents this idea to Lincoln. He was possibly the first person to do so. Lincoln is not convinced, but they argue until midnight. And over the next few months, they continue to argue and argue and argue, a sign that Lincoln was gradually warming up to the idea. And then come December of 1861, Lincoln tells his cabinet that tells the public that he will sign an Emancipation Proclamation.
So he is quite possibly the most influential U.S. senator you've really not heard much about.
Well, I'd heard that story about the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, many times, how it was gradual and he had to be convinced, Lincoln had to be convinced, but I didn't know this guy. So
yeah.
I literally all I connect with Sumner is caning, so I'm glad... Glad for you to expand my knowledge. But what about after the war?
Well, after the war, he kind of sees his political star and his influence slowly fading. He fought for various versions of the Reconstruction Amendments, and he pushed for a civil rights bill that would have provided equal public accommodations, kind of really foreshadowing all the problems caused by Jim Crow for the next century. He was losing influence, though. So one could say that he fought the good fight and he left a lasting influence and certainly had his followers, but was a lot less successful than he wanted to be after the Civil War.
So let's talk about the book itself, sort of the writing aspect and the storytelling.
You mean what gives it the narrative edge?
What gives it the narrative edge?
Well, what I liked about this book is that, first of all, the storytelling was great. I mean, expert storytelling, really liked that. But I also liked that this biography was written by someone who is not a biographer or historian first, although he is that, becomes that in the writing of this, but he's a lawyer first. So he's able to explain for the layman the origins of certain legal principles that find their way into Sumner's thinking. And I really appreciated that, especially as you get into the meat and potatoes of how the Constitution was written, you know, the language that the founding fathers could have used versus the language they did use. And also Sumner's early influences with, you know, working closely with Supreme Court justices. So that was kind of cool to see. There was one thing that I wanted to mention here that is not mentioned but once in this book, and it's that Sumner may have been on the autism spectrum. And I mention it at the end of this conversation, partly because it came early in the book for me, and it kind of colored everything that came afterwards for me. Like, was that part of where he was on the spectrum? Like, for example, Sumner, very early in his life, cataloged all, like, the English kings and what they did. Like, he basically wrote a book organizing all this stuff. He had no sense of humor. Like, he couldn't quite grasp Lincoln's sense of humor, never quite tolerated any of Lincoln's jokiness. Which, you know, you it could be part of being on the spectrum. It could just be a personality thing.
Some people are just terribly serious.
Yeah, some people are just terribly serious. He also organized the United States Code. Like, back then, when laws were written, they were just, metaphorically speaking, just thrown into a pile, right? There's no law or categories of laws. But he basically facilitated the organization of the code. So if there's a tax law, it goes into the tax code and so on and so forth. So when I asked him about this at the Atlanta History Center, he was careful to say, like, look, you can't really diagnose someone with
from
this,
the grave.
Right. This distance, and, you know, that's going to be left to a different scholar. But I'm just speaking about my personal reading experience of it and how it made me think of him going forward. He also had very hard time sort of building lasting relationships, but he wanted to. He seemed like a lonely guy, but he wanted to have deep and fulfilling human relationships. So anyway, like, all of that is just to say, like, this guy came alive for me in this book. He was someone I knew just about the caning, basically. But coming away from this book, I feel like I knew the guy. I admire his passion and his dedication to the cause, and saw how, you know, when it came down to, you know, political maneuvering versus a principle, he chose the principle. And that was really cool to see.
Well, I tell you, we're not going to talk about today's political environment, but I do see some connections between there and this. But thank you for telling me about the book. It's been fascinating learning about this character and the book itself. The book is called Charles Sumner, Conscience of a Nation by Zakir Tamiz. Peter, thanks for telling me about it.
Happy to.